Christmas, you filthy animal. And a Happy New Year.
How dare you?
Good morning and welcome into this Thursday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. I looked up as the pre-show music was playing, and the pre-show music was vanishing. I mean, it was going away. I grabbed another tune real quick, and it messed everything up. You guys on the podcast end, you won't, well, you'll still hear that. It's a Thursday in our neighborhood, and I don't know when you're listening or where you're listening, but I appreciate the fact that you do. Thank you so much for jumping on board, for subscribing to the podcast, and for sharing it with your friends. And if you would do me a favor, also, wherever you you subscribe to the podcast, whether it be Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or TuneIn Radio, give it a thumbs up, five stars, whatever. Let them know you're listening to it. Leave a review. Leave a comment, because I'd like to hear from you. It is, as I said, the Thursday, December 5th, 2019 edition of the Daily Perspective. And I've been sitting here scrambling through things, trying to get things loaded up, ready to go for today's podcast. And it is just, I got to be honest with you, it's wall-to-wall impeachment hearings. That's what's in the news right now. And I would love to be able to talk about other stuff. But the thing is that right now, here in the United States, this is what everybody's talking about in the news media. Now, when you get beyond the news media, the news nerds like myself, and the pundits, the commentators, the bloggers, most people are thinking about Christmas. They're out there just, you know, they're enjoying themselves, they're shopping, they're having fun with friends, they're thinking about their shopping lists and the like, and they're not paying a heck of a lot of attention to what's happening in the media, because it's that time of year. And I think as a result of that, that's part of the mix, I should say, when it comes down to opinion about the impeachment hearings. I think people right now, it's Christmas time. And because of what Christmas has become in the United States, it's a ginormous, huge, mongous. it's just this monster of a retail commercial holiday. People are focused on that, and they're not thinking so much about politics. And I think that's playing into public opinion and the polling. And I think people are just sick of hearing about this, and they want to think about Christmas right now. And gotta be honest with you, I'm kind of in the mix there.
Merry Christmas, you filthy animal.
Yeah, we watched Jane and I watched Home Alone and Home Alone 2. We spent some time in front of the tube yesterday. I tell you, Jane, bless her heart, Jane, my wife, the sweetest woman in the world, she's got some sort of a bug. Last week, one night, went to a nearby Dock in a Box to get Z-Packs and stuff, antibiotics and stuff, because we both had this junk, and we've been trying to shake it. And she's got a worse case of it than I had. And you can hear it in my voice now, and then you hear me clearing my throat. That's part of the whole thing. But she's her energy level just dropped off. She's been coughing through the night. She's been having a tough time. And it's one of those wheezing coughs, too. So she's coughing up. And so I took her to my ENT yesterday, the guy I go to every now and then. It used to be a lot more frequent, but not anymore. And he gave her shots and a prescription and told her to go buy some stuff, gave her a shopping list. And one of the shots that they give you when you go and you've got bronchitis, sinusitis, something like that, they give you an antibiotic shot to get the ball rolling. And to kick it into high gear, they give you a steroid shot. And that ramps your system up, makes everything move faster, and everything goes to work faster. That's kind of a simple layman's description of how it works if you're in medicine. I know you can describe it precisely. I'm not going to. But the thing is, one of the byproducts of the steroid shot is that you're wired and you don't sleep. And depending on who you are and what your metabolism is like, that can last a couple of days. So it's going to be interesting around our house. I mean, my wife, bless her heart, she... at one point last night, she sat up in her chair in the living room in front of the TV while we're watching movies, and she says, you know, and this is like 9 o'clock at night. She says, I want to clean the whole house. I want to finish decorating the Christmas tree. I want to get the house decorated. I want to do, and I could do every bit of that right now. And I thought to myself, how great. Nobody's sleeping tonight. But sanity prevailed and that didn't happen. But I do expect it to happen this weekend. I have a feeling there's going to be this flurry of activity around our house that hasn't happened because both of us have been a bit under the weather. Anyway, let's see, moving along. What do we got here? Boy, it's this crazy impeachment hearing, this huge mistake the Democrats have made. I don't know if you watched any of it yesterday. No doubt you heard about it, though. Even if you didn't watch it, you heard there were four legal constitutional law experts, and I have to put that in quotes, experts, who sat in front of this committee yesterday, and three out of the four of them two, I would say, out of the four of them were raving leftist lunatics. One was just a progressive leftist who just basically said, yeah, ditto what they said. And then the fourth guy, Jonathan Turley, Professor Jonathan Turley, who does commentary for CBS now, he's the guy who was called by the Republicans. He is a never-Trumper. He doesn't like Trump, didn't like him in the election. He was actually pro-Hillary, but he is a real constitutional law expert. And he was the shining spot in yesterday because he was sane, he was rational, he was reasonable, and he called everybody on the carpet. And we'll get into that in just a bit. But first, before we go there, I think it's important for us to get a little bit of perspective. Let's go to a different angle and explore a little bit of absurdity, shall we? Because as I like to say, this is me, Mark Congleton, your sometimes humble host, for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. Well, here comes the absurdity. A Texas congressman slammed his fellow Democrats yesterday. Are you ready? After not one person of color was called as an expert to testify during the first day of impeachment hearings conducted by the House Judiciary Committee. Representative Al, I'm crazy, but I'm in Congress, Green, the Democrat from Texas, rebuked his colleagues in a speech on the House floor before the committee began hearing. The hearing began. Three legal scholars later testified at the request of Democrats in the first Judiciary Committee impeachment hearing. Jonathan Turley, a professor at George Washington University Law School, was the sole witness called by the GOP. Green stepped up, stood up on the House floor, and said, I rise because I love my country, but I rise also today with heartfelt regrets. It hurts my heart, Mr. Speaker, to see the Judiciary Committee hearing experts on the topic of impeachment, one of the seminal issues of this Congress, hearing experts, and not one person of color among the experts. What subliminal message are we sending to the world when we have experts, but not one person of color? Are we saying that there are no people of color who are experts on this topic of impeachment? He claimed the House committee was taking advantage of black voters without affording them equal representation in the impeachment process. He goes on to say, I refuse to be ignored and taken for granted. I came here to represent the people who are ignored and taken for granted. Not one person of color among the constitutional scholars. It seems that there's a desire among some to have the output of people of color without input from the people of color. I rise today to say this is not about Democrats. It's not about Republicans. It's about fairness. It's about whether or not we have matured to the point in this country where we're going to treat all people equally. What an ignoramus. What a maroon. This guy makes the issue about race. He makes the issue about minority representation. Can I just suggest that there is a much larger issue at the center of everyone's focus right now? It's a much larger issue. One political party, and it is completely one-sided, make no mistake about this, one political party, regardless of claims of bipartisanship and sharing this burden equally, one political party has decided that it must remove the sitting president from office and go through the process of impeachment, which has only happened three other times in our nation's history. In the history of this nation, over two centuries, it's only happened three other times. And this man goes to the House floor and makes the issue race. I would ask how this nut job keeps getting reelected, but I think it's obvious. Like all progressives who are pandering to minorities, he promises to fight for the minorities. He promises to make the playing field level. He promises all of the things that they always promise. He is the ultimate social justice warrior to his constituents. And then when he goes to Washington, D.C., he makes no difference. He does nothing. He votes in lockstep with his party. He stands on the House floor and makes speeches like this one, but he really doesn't do anything for his people. And I say this because this is how race baiters in politics perform. It's what they do by not doing. They talk a lot, but they don't do much. And all they do in cases like Mr. Green, all they do is preach for the choir. They don't intend to get anything done. They just intend to object, Your Honor. And their people say, yes, that's good. He's standing up for us. Great. He stood up and he ran his mouth. What's he really done for you? What has he really done for you? I mean, substantively, not just hot air. What's he really done for you? What has his party done for you? Forget about him. Let's take that nutcase off the checkerboard. What have the rest of the pieces done for you in that party? What has the party as a whole done for you? All they've done for you is lie to you about who was behind pushing civil rights legislation, who was behind getting the slaves freed, who was behind getting black people the vote, who was behind civil rights and making it a reality for African Americans. It wasn't the Democrats. The Democrats under Lyndon Johnson decided they would take ownership of civil rights. They didn't want to. It was revolting, repulsive, repugnant to them. They didn't want to have anything to do with it. And if you look at the official record, you will see that they fought as hard as they could against granting you civil rights. They did everything they could to keep you from having civil rights. Until Lyndon Johnson called key people into his office and said, this is how we're going to have this entire segment of our population vote Democrat from now on, or for the next 200 years. Well, they've gotten 60 years into it, and they haven't done diddly for you, except do a lot of talking, a lot of finger-pointing, a lot of blaming, and making a lot of promises that they haven't fulfilled. So, when Representative Al Green from Texas steps up to the House floor and whines about there not being any people of color represented. He's doing everyone, including people of color, a disservice by distracting from what's actually going on. And in part, I think that's part of his purpose, is to distract you, if you're a person of color, from what's actually going on in Washington, D.C., and to get you emotionally involved so that you don't pay attention to the facts. You just get worked up about unfairness. Because that's manipulation. And that's what Democrats like Al Green love to do. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. Good to have you along. This whole thing going on in Washington, D.C. right now, it's a monumental failure. It's not going to work for the Democrats. But in true progressive form, they're going to press forward. They're going to continue telling the lie, because this is how progressives operate. They keep telling the lie because they've invested a lot in the lie working for them. Well, in order to support the lie, the Democrats have selected some interesting people to represent them as experts in this current set of hearings. Let's take a look at that. Going over to thedailycaller.com, there's an article by Amber Athey. And I want to talk about, it's called, if you want to look it up, Democrats Stack Judiciary Impeachment Hearing with Anti-Trump Lawyers. House Judiciary Democrats have opted to use an anti-Trump resistance lawyer to question witnesses during their first impeachment hearing on Wednesday. Democrats reportedly selected Norm Eisen on Tuesday to lead the questioning of witnesses, not Barry Burke, as was expected. Eisen is a co-founder of Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. The acronym is CREW, C-R-E-W, and served in the Obama administration before joining the Brookings Institution. He is also a frequent CNN commentator. That should tell you a lot right there. CNN is focused on impeachment. That is what they are. That's it. Impeachment of President Trump is their Malaysian airliner story of the day. Eisen is a frequent Trump critic and a member of the so-called hashtag resistance, and floated impeachment on his Twitter account before Trump ever took office. He said, this was December 11th of 2016. He said, purchasing an inauguration package entitles you to a discounted stay in the event of future impeachment proceedings. So he's been talking about impeachment of Trump, since December of 2016. Yikes. Also, meeting with my mentors, another one, Tom Mann and Norm Ornstein, re-Trump's constitutional conflicts. They warned us in 2009 this day would come. Viva la resistance. Another one, congrats, President Trump. Now let the battle begin. Proud of our first CREW complaint over at Trump's hotel. More to come. The Democrats' witness list also raises questions about potential bias against the president. Potential bias. As two out of the three witnesses they called are, in addition to being constitutional lawyers, Democrat donors. Pamela Karlan has donated over $10,000 to numerous Democratic candidates, such as Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, and Doug Jones. You people, my friends in Alabama, as a side note, you should find that interesting. This anti-Trumper nutcase who crosses the street to avoid stepping on sidewalks in front of Trump hotels, she has said so in public. It's on video. It's all over the web. Go look it up. She has donated to Democrat Senator Doug Jones' campaign in Alabama. Is she from Alabama? No. She is a hard-line leftist progressive Democrat. She is a crazed anti-Trumper, and she is donating to Doug Jones's campaign to fight against Trump in your state. I wonder how many other states she's contributed to fight against Trump. Also, while Michael Gerhardt donated $1,000 to Barack Obama back in 2017, the New York Times describes Carlin as a, quote, legal leader to progressive causes, end quote, pointing out that she is on the board of the left-leaning American Constitution Society, and that she signed a letter in 2016 from constitutional law scholars expressing concerns about Trump's rhetoric. Gerhardt, meanwhile, worked on Al Gore's Senate campaign and helped with Bill Clinton's transition team. The third Democratic witness, Noah Feldman, a Harvard law professor, has called for a special counsel to investigate Rudy Giuliani's actions in Ukraine and warned that Attorney General Bill Barr could become a target of the probe. Republicans, meanwhile, chose George Washington University law professor Jonathan Turley as their lone witness during the Wednesday proceedings. Turley is a frequent legal commentator on cable news, has been open to impeachment if warranted, but skeptical of the Democrats' arguments for removing Trump. And there's a lot currently online that you can, and I've got some audio that I'm going to be playing for you very shortly from him that shows even though Jonathan Turley is, he was a Hillary Clinton supporter. He was opposed to Trump becoming president. He is honest. That's the important thing. He is honest. And he honestly interprets constitutional law. He honestly inspects and weighs in the opinions of the founders. Unlike others, for example, Noah Feldman, this coming from Gateway Pundit, Noah Feldman, the first impeachment witness the Democrats rolled out yesterday, not only called for Trump's impeachment shortly after Trump was sworn in, he actually argued in a New York Times op-ed, which was titled, "Why Sharia?" that Sharia, Islamic Sharia law, is more humane than U.S. law. Why does this matter? Because it tells you the character and the mentality of the people the Democrats have chosen for this particular set of meetings that they're having. Noah Feldman, a Harvard law professor, bashed legal systems created by Western countries, including the United States, and argued that Sharia law is more just and fair than the U.S. Supreme Court. I have a feeling that people in Islamic nations who have watched homosexual friends hung and thrown from buildings would disagree. Mr. Feldman actually believes that a medieval system of laws that chops off the hands of thieves, stones adulterous women, blames the woman when she is raped by a man, publicly hangs and tosses homosexuals off of buildings is more progressive and humane than Western laws. He argued, in fact, for most of its history, Islamic law offered the most liberal and humane legal principles available anywhere in the world. Today, when we invoke the harsh punishments prescribed by Sharia for a handful of offenses, we rarely acknowledge the high standards of proof necessary for their implementation. High standards of proof. Once again, I have a feeling that those who have watched their friends suffer at the hands of Islamists would disagree. Feldman also claimed that the West needs Sharia and Islam. Quote, "It sometimes seems as if we need Sharia as Westerners have long needed Islam, as a canvas on which to project our ideas of the horrible and as a foil to make us look good." Here's some more. Let's just go ahead and delve some more into what he's had to say. "For generations, Western students of the traditional Islamic constitution have assumed that the scholars could offer no meaningful check on the ruler. As one historian has recently put it, although Sharia functioned as a constitution, the constitution was not enforceable because neither scholars nor subjects could compel their ruler to observe the law in the exercise of government. But almost no constitution anywhere in the world enables judges or non-governmental actors to compel the obedience of an executive who controls the means of force. The Supreme Court of the United States has no army behind it. Institutions that lack the power of the sword must use more subtle means to constrain executives. Like the American constitutional balance of powers, the traditional Islamic balance was maintained by words and ideas and not just by forcible compulsion. So today's Muslims are not being completely fanciful when they act and speak as though Sharia can structure a constitutional state subject to the rule of law. One big reason that Islamist political parties do so well when running on Sharia platforms is that their constituents recognize that Sharia once argued a balanced state in which legal rights were respected. Wow. Feldman was widely criticized for this New York Times piece, which was an excerpt from his book called The Fall and Rise of the Islamic State. He was criticized for promoting Sharia law. This is who the Democrats trotted out as a legal scholar and constitutional expert to sell the American public on impeaching President Trump. Let that sink in. Let that sink in. This guy who's arguing about the fairness of Sharia law. And once again, right now there are people in Iran whose friends and family members were murdered in cold blood by the Iranian state for protesting. Hundreds of them. Hundreds shot to death in the streets. Shot to death hiding from them in rice paddies. Hundreds of them. Oh, yeah. That's a whole lot more balanced and fair. Much, much more. But this guy, Feldman, loves Sharia law. And he is one of the Democrats' golden children on display. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. Merry Christmas. Hopefully you're having a good day. I hope you are. And that Christmas so far is going well for you. I know some of you are thinking, hey, what do you mean going well? It's December 5th. Come on. I don't shop until Christmas Eve at the Jiffy Mart. It is a Thursday edition of the podcast, December 5th, 2019. We're looking at the hearings from yesterday because honestly, there's not a whole heck of a lot else to talk about in the news. Yeah, other things have happened, but what everybody's focused on news-wise is the hearings. And I want to go, I want to go to an article on Fox News. Lawmakers and legal scholars sparred yesterday during the House Judiciary Committee's impeachment inquiry, with Democrats and their witnesses reviving concerns raised during the Russia probe, and Republicans and their sole witness arguing the impeachment of President Trump is predetermined, woefully inadequate, and dangerous. In perhaps the most heated moment of the day, Florida GOP Representative Matt Gaetz unloaded on the Democrat witnesses apparent bias, noting that Stanford law professor Pamela Karlan had appeared on an anti-Trump podcast, disparaged conservatives, and donated $1,200 to Barack Obama, $2,000 to Hillary Clinton, and $1,000 to Elizabeth Warren. Oh, by the way, she also, while making a joke, pulled Barron Trump pulled President Trump's son, 13-year-old son, into the mix. And she was making a joke. It was a bad, bad joke. She thought she was brilliant. You could tell by the look on her face. But yikes. Just yikes. They scream and yell about if it had been one of Obama's daughters, if it had been Chelsea Clinton, if it had been, you know, any leftist kid, then there would have been an outcry. And from the rank and file, from the general public, there was an outcry. But from the Democrat politicians, not so much. Well, I want to bring you the audio of Matt Gaetz as he talked to them about this. And this is about five and a half minutes long. And let's just let it play out, and then we'll come back to it.
Mr. Gaetz, the will of the American people also elected Donald Trump to be the president of the United States in the 2016 election, and there's one party that can't seem to get over it. Now, we understand the fact that in 2018 you took the House of Representatives, and we haven't spent our time during your tenure in power trying to remove the Speaker of the House, trying to delegitimize your ability to govern. Frankly, we'd love to govern with you. We'd love to pass USMCA. We'd love to put out a helping hand to our seniors and lower prescription drug prices. It's the will of the people you ignore when you continue down this terrible road of impeachment. Professor Gerhardt, you gave money to Barack Obama, right?
My family did, yes.
Four times?
That sounds about right. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I have a series of unanimous consent requests relating to Professor Feldman's work. The first, Noah Feldman, Trump's wiretap tweets raise risk of impeachment.
Gentlemen will suspend.
My time.
We'll take that time off. Has the gentleman submitted, have we seen those that material?
We can provide it to you, as is typical for unanimous.
And we'll consider the unanimous consent request later after we review
very
the
well.
Material.
Very well. Thank you.
The gentleman may continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Feldman wrote articles entitled, Trump's wiretap tweets raise risk of impeachment. He then wrote, Mar-a-Lago ad belongs in impeachment file. And then Mr. Jake Flanagan wrote in Quartz, a Harvard law professor thinks Trump could be impeached over fake news accusations. My question, Professor Feldman, is since you seem to believe that the basis for impeachment is even broader than the basis that my Democrat colleagues have laid forward, do you believe you're outside of the political mainstream on the question of impeachment?
I believe that impeachment is warranted whenever the president abuses his power for personal benefit or to corrupt the democratic process.
Did you write an article entitled, It's Hard to Take Impeachment Seriously Now?
Yes, I did write that article.
And in that article, hold on, I'm limited on time, sir. Since the 2018 midterm election, House Democrats have made it painfully clear that discussing impeachment is primarily or even exclusively a tool to weaken President Trump's chances in 2020. Did you write those words?
Until this call on July 25th, I was an impeachment skeptic. My mind, sir, and for
thank
good
you.
Reason.
I appreciate your testimony. Professor Carlin, you gave $2,000 or you gave $1,000 to Elizabeth Warren, right?
I believe so.
You gave $1,200 bucks to Barack Obama?
I have no reason to question that.
And you gave $2,000 to Hillary Clinton?
That's correct.
Why so much more for Hillary than the other two?
Because I've been giving a lot of money to charity recently because of all of the poor people in the United States.
Well, those aren't the only folks you've been given to. Now, have you ever been on a podcast called Versus Trump?
I think I was on a live panel that the people who ran the podcast called Versus Trump.
On that, do you remember saying the following?
She knows.
Liberals tend to cluster more. Conservatives, especially very conservative people, tend to spread out more. Perhaps because they don't even want to be around themselves. Did you say that?
Yes, I did.
Do you understand how that reflects contempt on people who are conservative?
No, what I was talking about there was the natural tendency, if you put the quote in context, the natural tendency of a compactness requirement to favor a party whose voters are more spread out.
Well,
and I do
professor,
not have
hold on,
I,
again, I'm very, I'm very limited on time,
with.
Professor. And so I just have to say, when you talk about how liberals want to be around each other and cluster, and conservatives don't want to be around each other, and so they have to spread out, it makes people, you may not see this from, you know, like the ivory towers of your law school, but it makes actual people in this country
when
feel
the
like,
president
excuse
calls
me, you don't get to interrupt me on this time. Now, let me also suggest that when you invoke the president's son's name here, when you try to make a little joke out of referencing Barron Trump, that does not lend credibility to your argument. It makes you look mean. It makes you look like you're attacking someone's family, the minor child of the President of the United States. So let's see if we can get into the facts. To all of the witnesses, if you have personal knowledge of a single material fact in the Schiff report, please raise your hand.
Crickets. Nobody can.
And let the record reflect, no personal knowledge of a single fact. And you know what? That continues on the tradition that we saw from Adam Schiff, where Ambassador Taylor could not identify an impeachable offense. Mr. Kent never met with the president. Fiona Hill never heard the president reference anything regarding military aid. Mr. Hale was unaware of any nefarious activity with aid. Colonel Vindman even rejected the new Democrat talking point that bribery was invoked here. Ambassador Volker denied that there was a quid pro quo, and Mr. Morrison, since there was nothing wrong on the call. The only direct evidence came from Gordon Sondland, who spoke to the President of the United States, and the President said, I want nothing. No quid pro quo. And you know what? If wiretapping a political opponent's an impeachable offense, I look forward to reading that Inspector General's report, because maybe it's a different president we should be impeaching.
Gentlemen's time has expired, Mr. Cicilline.
Wow. And there you have Matt Gaetz tearing into these people on this panel, these witnesses, who just admitted, as you heard the silence, that none of them had any personal knowledge of a single fact related to the accusations against the president. None of them. And I don't know if you've noticed this, but the narrative has changed. The narrative is no longer bribery. The narrative is no longer obstruction. The narrative is now abuse of power. This is what they all have in common, that they're talking about, abusing the power of the presidency. This is their current narrative. The allegations are that he abused his power. They have no proof. They have no evidence. They have nothing. They bombed out on bribery because they couldn't corroborate anything. There was not anything there. There was no there. The Democrat witnesses, as is the way they always are, their method of operation, they conceded no ground. It doesn't matter that they have no ground to stand on. They conceded no ground. Feldman breathlessly claimed, "If we cannot impeach a president who abuses his office for personal advantage, we no longer live in a democracy. We live in a monarchy, or we live under a dictatorship." There is no evidence. There is nothing to substantiate an abuse of his office for personal advantage. Nothing. There's only allegation. This is the same pattern that we've seen before. We saw this pattern with Mueller. We saw this pattern with the last kangaroo court. And we're seeing it play out again. Allegations are made. No evidence can be found. But they stand by it. They never address the fact that what they say isn't true or hasn't proven to pan out. They just change tactics and keep pushing forward. This guy Feldman, in his opening statement, said, "On its own, soliciting the leader of a foreign government in order to announce investigations of political rivals and perform those investigations would constitute a high crime and misdemeanor." Well, he didn't ask for help for that reason. It's very obvious from the testimony that occurred in the previous set of hearings that he asked for help because there was corruption. And Ukraine has been infamous for its corruption. The government has been intensely, not just corrupt, but intensely corrupt. And as a result, we've been watching, we have seen so many things play out. And Trump was making sure, as we have heard already from the previous set of hearings, he was making sure that the new leadership, the new president of Ukraine, was really serious about cleaning up his swamp. And as part of that, he said, "Hey, do me a favor, if you will, and look into this situation. Because the company Burisma and the people, the oligarchs, the really, really rich people associated with Burisma have been, there's no other way to put it, they've been in bed with Democrat, high-ranking Democrats for quite some time. There's been a lot of money changing hands. And Joe and Hunter Biden were just the most recent. And this was all starting to come into the public eye." And he said, "Hey, do me a favor and look into Burisma and Hunter Biden and all this stuff." It never happened. And nothing was contingent on anything happening as a result of it. But they keep saying that it did. They keep telling that same lie. And if you've recognized it, this is what they always do. Everybody sing along. Come on, you know the wait a minute. That's a different version. Merry Christmas. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Hi there. I don't know if you caught the Tucker Carlson show last night on Fox News, but his opening segment goes to what we've been discussing today, and I want to bring it back to you. I want to play. It's about a 5-minute long piece, and I want you to hear what he has to say, because he you just have to hear what the guy says, because he really does reveal something about one of these witnesses that the Democrats called, and it's really some great stuff. So listen up to Tucker Carlson. Hey.
Well, consider today's star witness, Pam Karlan. Look up her biography online and you'll see that she's the, quote, Kenneth and Harley Montgomery Professor of Public Interest Law at Stanford. Whoa, stand back, ladies and gentlemen. And before that, she clerked for a Supreme Court justice and earned not one, not two. Ladies and gentlemen, she earned 3 separate degrees at Yale. She's written several textbooks on constitutional law. If there's one person in this country who is impressive, who our system has deemed capable of making judgments that you don't even understand, it's this lady, this professor, Pamela Karlan. But think again. And this is a sub-theme of the impeachment drama that we'd like to highlight, because really it's a thing that will endure and change the country long after Trump is gone. It turns out the more you know about the people you're supposed to consider impressive, the more you find out they're not impressive at all. Actually, they're not very smart. They have no wisdom. Their personal lives are a disaster. By the way, if they're so wise, why are they so unhappy? Every one of them is. And in this specific case, they're not even unbiased arbiters. Karlan, for example, she's not some apolitical academic pulled out of cold storage to testify about what we ought to do. She's an activist. She's literally a political activist who donates thousands of dollars to the Democratic Party. Watch this.
Professor Karlan, you gave $2,000 or you gave $1,000 to Elizabeth Warren, right?
I believe so.
You gave $1,200 to Barack Obama?
I have no reason to question that.
And you gave $2,000 to Hillary Clinton?
That's correct.
So does donating to Democrats prove that Karlan is wrong? No, it doesn't, actually. She proved that herself. She made it very clear that she was incapable of clear thinking or wise judgments. Instead, she made bizarre claims. She claimed that delaying military aid to Ukraine was just like cutting off rescue services to Americans after a hurricane. What? It's like insane and dumb, by the way. She also engaged in embarrassing political stunts like ridiculing the president's teenage son. What?
What comparisons, Professor Karlan, can we make between kings that the framers were afraid of and the president's conduct today?
The Constitution says there can be no titles of nobility. So while the president can name his son Baron, he can't make him a baron.
Thank you. The founding...
Yeah, I wonder how long they practiced that one in the mirror. It was petty and dumb, not surprising, though. Karlan has made remarks like this before. She previously suggested that Jeff Sessions was evil. Why? Because of the name his parents gave him. What a mediocrity. In 2006, well before the rest of the left embraced the Great Awakening, Karlan was ahead of the game. She was already bashing people on the basis of their sex, skin color, and sexual orientation. Watch this.
We have to seize back the high ground on patriotism and on love of our country, because we have more reason than they do to love America. Rich, pampered, prodigal, sanctimonious, incurious, white, straight sons of the powerful do pretty well everywhere in the world, and they always have.
This lady needs a shrink. The sons of the powerful, really? You're a law professor at Stanford and you're lecturing other people about how they're powerful? Right. This is the legendary scholar coming down from on high to tell us who is good and who is evil. Please. What a mediocrity. What a moron. Her fellow witnesses were almost as embarrassing. Noah Feldman, the, quote, Felix Frankfurter professor of law at Harvard Law School, told lawmakers that he was skeptical of impeachment until this past summer, suggesting, of course, that his endorsement was more legitimate. He's not political. But it turns out that was a lie. It was a lie. How do we know? Because all the way back in March of 2017, this same man, Noah Feldman, suggested that Trump should be impeached because of a tweet he sent accusing President Obama of monitoring Trump Tower. Yeah, that was impeachable, he said. He also said that Jim Comey's memo of his conversations with Trump was impeachment-worthy, too. He even told Slate.com, please. If he's so impressive, why is he writing for Slate? Whatever. But he told Slate that the president doesn't actually have the freedom of speech and should be impeached simply for saying things that Noah Feldman doesn't like. Okay. The only witness who didn't embarrass himself today was Georgetown University law professor Jonathan Turley. Now, reporters are describing Turley as a GOP witness, implying that he's a partisan or a right-winger or a Republican even, but he's none of those things. Turley, who has come on the show quite a bit, know him well, is a member of the Democratic Party. He's on the left. He's advocated legalizing polygamy. He wanted George W. Bush tried for war crimes. He's not from the Federalist Society. He doesn't even like Trump. He didn't vote for him. But he called an absurdity where he saw one.
And that is how Tucker Carlson handled things last night. And he brought out some great stuff. He really did. Now, he was talking about the last professor, and I've got some audio of him here. And it's good stuff. We need to listen to it. It's about 3 minutes long. Here we go.
If you impeach a president, if you make a high crime and misdemeanor out of going to the courts, it is an abuse of power. It's your abuse of power. You're doing precisely what you're criticizing the president for doing. You're saying Article 1 gives us complete authority that when we demand information from another branch, it must be turned over or we'll impeach you in record time. Now, making that worse is that you have such a short investigation. It's a perfect storm. You set an incredibly short period, demand a huge amount of information, and when the president goes to court, you then impeach him. Now, does that track with what you've heard about impeachment? Does that track with the rule of law that we talked about? So, on obstruction, I would encourage you to think about this. In Nixon, it did go to the courts, and Nixon lost. And that was the reason Nixon resigned. He resigned a few days after the Supreme Court ruled against him in that critical case. But in that case, the court recognized there are executive privilege arguments that can be made. It didn't say, you had no right coming to us, don't darken our doorstep again. It said, we've heard your arguments, we've heard Congress's arguments, and you know what? You lose. Turn over the material to Congress. Do you know that what that did for the judiciary is it gave this body legitimacy. It wasn't the Rodino extreme position that only you decide what information can be produced. Now, recently, there are some rulings against President Trump, including a ruling involving Don McGahn. Mr. Chairman, I testified in front of you a few months ago, and if you recall, we had an exchange, and I encouraged you to bring those actions. And I said I thought you would win, and you did. And I think it was an important win for this committee because I don't agree with President Trump's argument in that case. But that's an example of what can happen if you actually subpoena witnesses and go to court. Then you have an obstruction case because a court issues an order. And unless they stay that order by a higher court, you have obstruction. But I can't emphasize this enough, and I'll say it just one more time. If you impeach a president, if you make a high crime and misdemeanor out of going to the courts, it is an abuse of power. It's your abuse of power. You're doing precisely what you're criticizing the president for doing. We have a third branch that deals with conflicts of the other two branches. And what comes out of there and what you do with it is the very definition of legitimacy.
And that, what you just heard, is a real expert on law. Not a leftist opinion spewer, a social justice warrior, not someone who is a progressive resistor. That guy, George Washington University Law School Professor Jonathan Turley, is a real professor of the law, a real expert on the Constitution. In fact, during his time, he spoke at length about impeachment and how it all came to be, how it was framed by the framers of the Constitution. And I think you should do some homework today. You should go look that up and watch his entire time, because he was excellent. And keep this in mind as well. Not one question was asked of him by the Democrats. Not one. The Democrats on that panel did not want to give him any more weight than he was carrying on his own. They knew he would devastate them. Devastate them. That's it. God bless you. We'll see you tomorrow on the next edition of The Daily Perspective. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.